find the right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. From the heartland, deep in the Ouachita Mountains of western Arkansas, where the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, the Guerrilla Media Network presents The Reynolds Reveal, the new weekly show that, no matter the limitations that may trammel inquiry elsewhere, sifts and winnows without fear or favor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds. Today is Wednesday, September 18, 2013. This is episode number 27 of the Reynolds Reveal, and I appreciate you for listening in. And yes, we do welcome your calls here at the Guerrilla Media Network, the number 218-862-9829. Well, we've been off the air for the last 2 weeks. The Guerrilla Media Network staff taking a much-deserved vacation break, but we're back, and last week, 1 week ago exactly, was the 12th anniversary of the gruesome and fantastic events of 9/11 in 2001. And it seems only appropriate and we're honored to have as our guest today a very special person on planet Earth. It is Dr. Judy Wood, the brilliant PhD engineer and applied physicist, who has conducted the only honest and complete forensic investigation of what happened at the World Trade Center and to the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. So thank you so much, Dr. Wood, for making time to come on our show today, 1 week after the 12th anniversary of 9/11. Welcome to the Reynolds Reveal.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and thank you for all that you have done for me. As I've said many times, there's no way I would have gotten anywhere without you.
Hey, it gives me chills.
Even you ran defense for me.
it gives me chills. And I want to begin to establish credibility for those who don't know of Dr. Judy Wood. And she's uniquely qualified in the world by her training and experience to gather evidence from the incredible events of 9/11 and analyze it. Specifically, she holds a BS in civil engineering, emphasis on structural, 1981, a master's of science in engineering mechanics or applied physics, 1983, and a PhD in materials engineering science, 1992. All from Virginia Tech, for short, in Blacksburg, Virginia. Further, she has taught and done research at Clemson University in Clemson, South Carolina, co-authoring some 60 academic articles in refereed engineering journals and made numerous presentations at engineering conferences. Now, can anybody question that she is a qualified forensic scientist? I don't think they can, even though they have a lot of innuendo and shadowy remarks. What could you add to that, Dr. Wood?
Well, that my area of research is analyzing images to find material properties, to determine material properties, whether it's, you know, looking at the deformation of materials and so forth, or displacements of materials, and using optical methods.
Thanks for that. Now, we were babes in the woods 10 years ago, I'd say. We didn't know how the system operated as well as we do now. And I want to mention something that comes to mind as an economist and see if there are any parallels. And I'm referring to the muddle-up, the bollocks, the cover-up of your work. The slowing down of the pursuit of the real perpetrators, which depends on getting evidence. Now, the book I have in mind is by Henry Hazlitt. It's called Economics in One Lesson. And at the beginning, he just has the one lesson is in one short chapter, and then he has these applications. a very cool little a compact book. And he refers to two things. He says, well, economics is difficult because of the inherent difficulties of the subject. People focus too much on the visible short-run consequences of, for example, the government intervention. And they ignore the consequences that are less visible or hidden or a longer run. And you got to analyze it in terms of overall impact. Now, the other thing he mentions is that economics is more difficult, he's claimed, than the physical sciences for the following reason. Propagandists for special interests are trotted out, and they intend to give you this confusion and cover up and mislead people. And you got to penetrate that. Whereas he thought at the time, this book came out in 1946, I believe, that the physical scientists were free of this. And what we're seeing here, Dr. Wood, is it's hard to believe it's anything but a deliberate cover-up, plus the normal confusion that ignorance that goes on. Well, you see that parallel at all?
The appearance of ignorance.
Ah! So you would say on balance, much of it, if not a majority, is intended to cover up the crime.
The people tend to follow a leader. So you don't need to control much of any people but one. And then he controls the rest because people tend to follow the leader. They don't think for themselves. They turn their thinking over to someone else's keeping. And then that one person to maintain plausible deniability pretends to be stupid or ignorant or, you know, blind, various scenarios. But when they start lying about science and they're supposed to be a scientist, we have something more seriously wrong. And the first one that I came to was this one that was arguing about something that's high school physics and acted as though we need an experiment. And then claimed that my experiment was wrong. Back then, we couldn't find images on the internet very easily, so I went ahead and made my own image with material that I knew was what it was.
So is this referring to the glowing metals and heat?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, whether it's iron or aluminum, whatever it is, it glows at the same temperature. Iron, you know, melts at 1535. That is centigrade, and it's glowing like white hot at that temperature. So if you're going to get aluminum glowing white hot at that temperature, you know, if aluminum is at that temperature, it's going to be glowing white hot.
Okay,
but,
now
you know, room temperature aluminum with 1535 degree, iron. That's ridiculous. You got to compare both.
You know what this tells me? That the enemy camp recognized you were a problem early on, the same way I recognized I've got to see if I can help her in any way and promote her work and help her in her work. So I wasn't the only one who saw this. They see it as a big problem. We got to head her off at the pass or, discredit her work somehow or other, and I'm saying no. I need to help promote. Sure,
I think I even have the clip I can play here. Let's see.
It took a while for the group to trace down this video evidence. It's an amateur videographer, a couple of them actually, showing and capturing this event. This is a very anomalous activity. This molten metal flowing. I knew it was not aluminum. I had worked with molten aluminum before. And molten liquid aluminum has the property that it's silvery, rather like aluminum foil, you know, and at all temperatures in daylight conditions.
At all temperatures in daylight conditions.
That's obvious to a lay person, I would think. You know, this has got to be false.
And I first contacted this person, Stephen Jones, with, wait a minute, are you having a senior moment? Yeah. You can't identify something by, you know, whether that's glowing. You know, hot things glow. And also, things that aren't hot glow. Just because it's glowing doesn't tell you what material it is. You know, if you want to rule out a little, use a different line of reasoning, because this one is bogus.
And, so what did Professor Stephen Jones, what was his reply?
Oh, it was, you know, round and round. Well, he thought it did. He was going to run an experiment. Well, I couldn't come up with a reliable photo, so I made my own. I melted aluminum in my lab. My student, you know, was taking pictures, helping me. And I said it to him. He says, well, maybe it glows in Clemson, South Carolina, but it doesn't glow in Provo, Utah.
No. Yeah. A cannonball shot off in Alabama has a different path than the same setup in Brazil, right?
Right, right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, thermal energy is thermal energy. And, you know, it's just different, you know, amounts that it would take in, different amounts of heat it would take in, but still, it radiates a particular color in a particular temperature. Your stove burner, when it's hot, it gets bright orange or sometimes whitish orange or yellowish orange. You know, that means it's hot. You know, it doesn't have to be this material, that material. And what it hit me immediately was my mom used to fire pottery in a kiln. You know, when it's at 2100 degrees or so, you look in there and everything's the same color. It's all bright, you know, yellow, white. You don't have a black hole where you have something that was aluminum. You know, it's ridiculous. Everything glows at the same temperature. Like when you cook something in your fire, you get your fireplace really stoking hot, it starts glowing if it's the same temperature. So, like, you know, can a PhD educated nuclear physicist be this slow to catch on? Well, we originally said it can be this retarded, you know, being slow to catch on.
Yeah. And the answer is supposed to be no, right?
Right. But to keep people from answering that question, he claimed that we called him mentally retarded. You know, a retard or something like that. Like, how dare they attack me? But people were distracted away from asking themselves that question. There's a beautiful diversion. But I found that question is when you find yourself naturally asking, can a blank, you know, fill in the blank, be just retarded? You know, slow to catch on, like, you know, music, you know, retards toward the end when you slow it down. And so when you find yourself naturally asking that, you have to step back and pause and say, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Hey, I'd like to point out Gerard Holmgren, the now deceased famous note planer from Australia, caught Jones in a lie right away. Everybody was happy in September of 05 when Jones appeared. Okay, we've got a credentialed physicist out of BYU who's going to take on the 9/11 challenge and put it up to the government. Nah, this can't be right. And he supposedly, he reported himself, oh, I went out to study a 767.
No, 757.
That's right. It was a 757. He got the model wrong. And
yeah, Gerard, the 757 hit the World Trade Center.
Right. Jones had been posturing already as, I'm a scientist, I've got credentials, I've got a white smock or jacket to wear, and everybody is supposed to, whatever you say, sir. No. You know, and so right away, the guy is exposed. And we waited, I think it was a year, to really thunk them bad in an article.
We just said, why isn't he asking this question? Why isn't he asking that question and so forth? And then we went ahead and asked those questions because, you know, they need to be asked. But taking that as the backdrop, you know, here we are with a PhD educated nuclear physicist who teaches physics classes at Brigham Young University. Yet he doesn't know, realize that, you know, the difference between thermal energy weapons and kinetic energy weapons and directed energy weapons. You know, and
yeah,
that somehow some kinetic energy device caused the towers to go poof instantly, or a thermal energy device, you know, welding material, caused the material to turn to
the dust in midair without getting hot. It's so ridiculous.
It is, but then you look at his career history, his ties to Los Alamos, his involvement in so-called cold fusion, a term attributed, well, that he coined to ruin the whole Pons Fleischmann breakthrough.
It's very amazing. We have to look back and learn from this as to how easily people are managed. They follow the leader and they trash the person the leader tells them to trash.
So it's like the emperor has no clothes, and it takes a 5-year-old boy to point it out. Everybody else, this is royalty.
But then the emperor points to the boy and says, "Oh, he's a liar. Don't believe him." and the people don't.
Yeah, and who are you going to believe, the emperor or the 5-year-old?
Right, and that is exactly what happens.
And we should. According to Dr. Wood, look at the evidence about whether the emperor is clothed or not, shouldn't we?
Yeah, exactly. You have to begin with the evidence and see where the evidence leads you. You don't begin with a theory. And right off the bat, Stephen Jones was teaching people what the scientific method is, and he would say it in this, such a way that people just, you know, this cutesy way that people just kind of, you know, ooh and ah over him. And fall for it. You know, a good salesman isn't going to be harsh. A good salesman is going to be slick and smooth. And so people decide, okay, that must be the scientific method. Well, that's a scientific method if you're trying to come up with a theory of gravity or a theory of some aspect of nature, you know, a natural phenomenon, but not for doing a crime investigation. You don't solve a crime based on a theory. You solve a crime based on evidence. And you have to go where the evidence leads. You don't have a theory of an autopsy. You have an actual autopsy. It's either conclusive or not conclusive. If it's conclusive, then there's no question as to, you know, what the deal is. You know, if the guy doesn't have a bullet hole in him, you can't say the person holding the smoking gun there shot him to death. You know, the body has a bullet hole in it. You know, there's various... You know, obvious things like that. We have the same thing at the World Trade Center. We have no evidence of a kinetic energy weapon. We actually have evidence to the contrary. If a kinetic energy weapon, we're talking about like a missile, a wrecking ball, a big hammer, lots of little hammers, you know, things that go bang, like bombs, things that use velocity to hit something with a mass. A variety of things. We didn't have that.
Well, what would be an example of some of that evidence? Go ahead.
You'd have the building would blow into chunks, and the chunks would go flying, and they'd stay chunks all the way through their flight until they hit something. They wouldn't dissolve into dust as they're flying, but also they would hit the ground. Boom. And it would be recorded on the seismic chart. If you hit a rock with a hammer, a big hammer, let's say you get a wrecking ball and go boom on a rock, it's going to be recorded in the local seismic station because it's like hitting a tuning fork.
And each tower, I don't think this is disputed any longer, weighed an estimated 500,000 tons, each tower.
Correct. And if that is slammed to the ground, it would be like a huge, you know, hammer hitting a tuning fork, and it would ring at the local recording station. But there were no S waves or P waves. That's the waves that travel through the earth, only surface waves, which is what you would get if you just picked the building up and took it off the ground and, you know, tossed it in outer space or whatever, just taking the weight off the ground or turning it into dust. If you chopped the building up into chunks, you know, busted it up with things hitting it, bombs blowing up, whatnot, and the place is slammed to the ground, it would be recorded on the seismic chart. Also, bombs create heat, lots of it. You know, and this welding material, it works by thermal conductivity. And how long would it take to get that heat to go through a 1-inch thick steel column. How about a 4-inch thick or a 5-inch thick steel column? You aren't going to do it in nanoseconds. For the North Tower, the ground shook, the surface wave, that is, shook for 8 seconds. It takes 9.5 seconds to drop a bowling ball off the roof and have it hit the ground. In other words, the building turned to dust in midair before hitting the ground, and it was destroyed faster than it would take to drop a bowling ball off the roof. That proves the building did not slam to the ground.
And all the evidence is consistent. So much of this evidence is easily understood. The visual evidence that the buildings and chunks of the building are turning to dust in midair.
Oh, very much. And one of the things I find the funniest is when people say, oh, well, it all, you know, the missing debris. Because if the building, you know, fell to the ground, you see a pile of debris there. They say, well, it's in the basement. And I like to point this out about the North Tower. There are 14 people, there's 13 first responders and one civilian that walked out of there. They survived in stairwell B in the second, third, and fourth floor. There were two more people that survived above that level where the building didn't even survive. And one guy was on the 22nd floor and just rode the dust cloud down and ended up on top of that stairwell B. But those guys who survived in stairwell B, if the building was getting mashed into the basement, how did it get there? Did it take a detour, you know, go down VC Street and around and, you know, take the elevator down to get down to the basement? How did it get around those people without squashing them? It couldn't have. We also have pictures of the PATH train station where there's PATH trains sitting there. There's water there, of course, because there's fire hoses that have been all over the place. But you know how FEMA goes in, they spray paint these red X's and they count how many live bodies, how many dead bodies, and whatever it's in their symbol that they put on there. They went down there and were doing that. You know, the basement's still there.
It's amazing to me, even though I should know better, the resistance to the where did the towers go. Buy this book, folks, wheredidthetowersgo.com. The resistance is still amazing. Now, where is the scientific refutation? Where should we go to find a coherent telling criticisms of your book? You know, evidence is wrong.
There's no refutation of my book. There can't be, because evidence isn't wrong. And I present evidence, and only evidence, not a theory. When folks refer to my work as a theory, then they are introducing doubt by misnaming it. I have evidence. It's kind of like an autopsy report. It's either conclusive or not conclusive. A conclusive autopsy report means they have enough, you know, information to determine what happened to the body. That's basically what I have about what happened to the buildings. And there's evidence that no one else can come up with a different answer than that. And it's, you know, just based on, you know, logic and looking at it. You look at the picture, every single picture. Okay, where's the material? We have George Stephanopoulos at the scene talking to Peter Jennings in the studio saying, well, I've been asking, you know, when Peter Jennings says, where did all the rubble go? And George Stephanopoulos says, well, I've been asking folks that. And one volunteer, Robert Gerlinski, explained it all fell down into the ground, was pulverized, evaporated. And you know, the poor guy, that's the best he could do. He's supposed to be telling the world what he sees. And that's the best he can come up with for why there's not enough rubble there. And that's about 24 hours after the towers went away. So any piece of data you look at, it's all consistent. It's all consistent with the buildings turning to dust in midair, especially looking at, you can follow this, you know, chunk of steel falling down with all this dust, you know, opaque dust pouring off of it. And then pretty soon, you don't see the steel beam anymore, and the dust is, you know, wafting away. The beam doesn't hit the ground.
And the dust is not coming off the beam. That is the former beam.
Right. I tell people for an exercise, is say you're going to impersonate this beam. So you're going to, you know, jump from the top floor and first cover yourself with dust, jump from the top floor. So the guy up the street, he looks up.
Is he going to see that thick dust trailing off? No. Okay, so you're going to see, I guess we have to wait the break.
We have to take a break. You're listening to the Reynolds Reveal and my special guest following the 12th anniversary or remembrance of 9/11 is Dr. Judy Wood, the most important person in the truth about 9/11. So come on back after the break. Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and if you would like to speak with Dr. Judy Wood, who is a scientist, make no mistake, she is the scientist on the case of 9/11. The number to call is 218-862-9829. Now, Dr. Wood, we were talking over the break, and you would like to discuss three different methods of destroying the World Trade Center, and two of them are wrong.
Right, and you look at categories, you know, thermal energy, kinetic energy, or directed energy. So you have this piece of material flying through the air, and it turns into dust as it's flying through the air. It's disintegrating. How can you argue that's kinetic energy doing that? You know, air resistance isn't going to cause steel to turn into dust. Very, very fine dust. You can't get a hammer and pound on those who say that it was concrete dust, you can't get a hammer and pound on concrete enough to give it that fine. We're talking about, you know, like the size of DNA, about 1/100th of the size of red blood cells, that fine. That only comes from atoms, instead of being attracted to each other, repelling each other, they're coming apart. Thermal energy doesn't do that. Unless you're cooking the building and vaporizing the building, but the building was not cooked to death. The dust cloud was reported as initially being cooler than ambient temperature. And I think most everyone saw that there's a whole lot of paper floating around that wasn't burned. And if the towers were, you know, heated that high, people would have been blinded by the light. You know, we didn't see that. You didn't see this. The towers weren't lit up like a Christmas tree. So we can eliminate thermal energy weapons. and kinetic energy weapons, too. You know, it wasn't anything beaten on the buildings or exploding the buildings, you know, with a bomb here, a bomb there, lots of bombs, lots of hammers, a wrecking ball, pea shooters. Those are kinetic energy weapons. And so now let's go to directed energy. And my definition
of that
is... Hold
up. Let me ask you about kinetic, because
okay,
many of your critics accuse you, or in some cases me, of ignoring or denying explosion. But that's a false accusation, isn't it?
Right. Okay, let's get to that. I remember we're just for the break. And we were talking about, I've forgotten it. Sorry.
Oh.
I was listening to what you said, but as for refuting my work. They cannot refute my work because it's just evidence. It's not a theory. It's just evidence. But it's conclusive evidence. However, because they can't refute my book, they rewrite it and refute that. They promote false propaganda and then refute their own propaganda that they're promoting. Like saying, oh, she claims it was a laser beam from outer space. No, I don't claim that. So that is not refuting me. If
and they can't
from outer
quote
space.
You. They make these charges, but they don't quote from the book or from your website, drjudywood.com. They don't.
Right.
Like scholarly methods.
Exactly. And those who, you know, like alien scientists or Jeremy Riss,
who claimed, oh, but the only directed energy weapon he knows of is a laser beam from space. So therefore, she was talking about laser beams from space. That's how he makes that jump. But directed energy, is my definition of it, is energy that's directed, and then it's used as a weapon. But it's directed in a couple of different ways. One, geographically, you know, buildings with a WTC prefix were destroyed, and other buildings were not destroyed. But also, its energy is directed to do something differently than it normally does. Instead of atoms being attracted to each other, they repel each other. They're coming apart. And that means all of the matter just comes apart. And, you know, when water turns into steam, it suddenly needs 1,600 times more volume to spread out. It needs more elbow room. Well, this is, you know, when I was looking at the picture of the tipping top of Tower 2, that was my aha moment. It looked like the building was essentially doing the same thing, a solid turning into, you know, kind of steam, you know, just the particulates. They suddenly were just expanding outward instead of, it wasn't that something hit something else and broke. It wasn't that something exploded and launched something. You know, pieces that were flying through the air were dissolving as they were flying through the air. And then you can look right below where you saw pieces falling, and there's just paper and dust. There's no solid chunks. I'm not saying there's no solid chunks anywhere, but I'm saying this particular video, looking at that intersection that I call the Twilight Zone image. But as for this, the quote debunking of, you know, they hear an explosion, so therefore it must be a bomb. Well, you put an egg in your microwave, you're going to hear an explosion. You know, bombs go boom, but not everything that goes boom is a bomb. And if you're turning something into dust, think of all the pressure vessels in that building. You have air pressure tanks, you have water tanks, and there's lots of water tanks because they don't pump the water up one, you know, directly up. They pump it up in stages because you'd have way too much head. It would just siphon out of, you know, any toilet at the top floor. So they pump it up, you know, like 10 or so stories at a time. See, my civil engineering background comes in handy. And then they pump it up, you know, some more. And then, you know, each time, you don't have to pump it more than 10 feet at a time. I mean, 10 stories at a time. It might be 12. It might be, you know, some amount. Well, you have all these big holding tanks. Those are pressure vessels. When those start to weaken, it's going to come a point when they can no longer hold the pressure, and they're going to rupture. Same with air tanks. And by golly, at ground level, there are air tanks that the firefighters wear to fight fires so they can breathe clean air. Those were identified as rupturing at ground level. Is it
that the pressure builds up and or the material in the tank itself weakens or the valves explode?
Well,
or?
Something is happening to them. It's faster than environmental degradation. Also, there are vehicles that exploded. But, you know, at ground level, the only things that were identified as exploding, people heard bombs, the sound of bombs, you know, the sound of booms. But they didn't identify what was exploding, except in these instances that were vehicles exploding and Scott tanks, you know, oxygen tanks. It could be the valves, some it could be the tank itself. There's a variety of stories. There were also a bunch of bullets in the glove compartment of a police car that was parked in the toasted car lot. And I actually found a video where you hear them going bang, 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 bang. The bullets are just exploding. Now, how does that happen?
Now, how can somebody, they can't if they're honest, but if you ever watch these videos or see a live controlled demolition and you hear that you see those, the explosions, the pop, 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 and then there's like a delay, and then it's almost like Wile E. Coyote. You look down and then all of a sudden the building it lost its structural integrity at all these weak points and it implodes. But my point is, there's no mistaking that sequence of explosions, and yet
it's a bang, 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 and then the building starts moving.
Yes. And that didn't happen. So it's very important, I think, that even in the controlled demolition, much less like a nuclear explosion or series of nuclear explosions, that
or here's this piece of evidence that sometimes gets used when people say, well, it looked like a controlled demolition, or it reminded me of a controlled demolition. Well, that's not proof. You know, you look like a killer, so therefore we should, you know, give you an electric chair. Yeah. That you need more evidence than just it looked like. And to me, it did not look like. Because you don't have bang, 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 bang. Also, the seismic charts. Like Building 7, for example, a 47-story building. It has 6 times the potential energy of the Seattle King Dome, which sits on like a jello kind of foundation, silt and washout from above. It is not bedrock, so it would absorb more energy. And that made a 2.3 on the Richter scale and also made S waves and P waves that traveled through the Earth. The Building 7 that was 6 times the potential energy made a 0.6 on the Richter scale.
And 2.3, isn't that, it's equivalent to something, well, it's undetectable. A jackhammer. That, and That's consistent. That the scientific data, the seismic data, is consistent with the witnesses present. Their testimony, isn't it? It
right,
was almost like a silent event.
Yeah, and a lot of people didn't know. Like this particular video of a woman being interviewed, and Building 7 is behind her. And I don't know if it's a cameraman or the interviewer, or if they're one and the same. But suddenly the building starts dropping down behind her, and it gets about halfway down, and the guy says, whoa, because he sees, you know, the backdrop, and the woman has no idea that a building's dropping behind her. No
now,
clue.
You may have well thought about this, but isn't there seem to be superficially some differences in which, for example, the WTC-7 is lathering up out of one side. It's as if the interior of the Building 7 is dissolving, and then at the end we see debris from the exterior of the building. And
it deteriorated more slowly because it was, you know, fuming away for and lathering away for about 7 hours or so. But if you look at that tipping top of Building 2, Tower 2, that tipping top, and that's like 35 stories. Imagine that is, Building 7.
Yes.
And it was lathering up for just that top.
Are you cautious online? A new breed of criminal is hoping you're careful about sites you visit and avoid downloading spyware. That makes you the perfect mark. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back in a moment with a frightening twist in cybercrime.
Your search engine is watching you, recording all your searches and creating a massive database of your personal information. That's creepy, but it doesn't have to be that way. Startpage.com is the world's most private search engine. Startpage doesn't store your IP address, make a record of your searches, or use tracking cookies, and they're third-party certified. If you don't like Big Brother spying on you, start over with Startpage. Great search results and total privacy. Startpage.com, the world's most private search engine.
You're surfing the internet and you think you're safe. After all, you take precautions. Then out of the blue, a window pops up. It warns you that your computer has been infected and provides a link for antivirus software. Oh no. Don't be fooled. You're the target of cyber criminals peddling scareware. Scareware is scam software. It might cost $50 or it could be free, but you'll pay a steep price if you fall for it. Just visiting a scareware site could infect your computer. And if you buy their worthless software, it often comes loaded with malware that siphons your personal information. If you download it, you'll really have something to worry about. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
So what would you guess
Do you owe the IRS more than $10,000? Well, it happens to the best of us. Just ask Charlie.
I was a pro NFL player, defensive back. Yes, I did get a letter from the IRS.
It's a scary thing, even for a big man like Charlie.
Well, man, when you see those dreaded letters, capital IRS, $60,000, man, you almost dropped your knees. You know, they were trying to levy my accounts, garnish me, real bad situation.
Charlie found out about the law offices of Craig Zimmerman.
I heard their commercial on the radio. I said, well, hey, let me give him a call. Well, it was like talking to my brother, talking to a great friend. I called Craig Zimmerman, and they put a stop to it.
You'll love the way they do business.
Like we say in the NFL, they never dropped the ball. They did a great job for me.
You may be able to significantly reduce your tax debt. Call the law offices of Craig Zimmerman and get your game plan. 800-638-0727.
Craig Zimmerman, they threw a touchdown for me.
Call now and find out how much you can save. 800-638-0727. 800-638-0727.
What were you thinking about during the 2 weeks after Hurricane Sandy? For most of us in the Northeast, it was where to find a gas station with less than a three-hour wait. Don't think it can happen again, not just with gas, but with food, too. Millions of people across the United States want to build a safety net of food storage, but are overwhelmed by the research and the time commitment required to properly plan for a year's supply. Since 1994, Bruce Hopkins, the Internet grocer, has been connecting people with quality, reliable, long-lasting food that'll be there for you when you most need it. Follow the example of Joseph of Egypt and build a safety stock of food today. Go to internet-grocer.com or call 903-356-6443. That's 903-356-6443. Or internet-grocer.com. Internet-grocer.com. Be prepared.
See pockmarks, like machine gun firing across all the adjacent buildings, which you didn't see.
And so what about, you would have had flying glass and in the conventional sort, jagged, linear, and there would have been windows out all in the whole downtown Manhattan, and yet that didn't happen.
Right, right. And, you know, the Seattle Kingdom is a good example. I remember, you know, they were saying, and the dust filled the air for almost 20 minutes.
Right.
But it was covering Manhattan for, you know, weeks, months, years. It kept coming up. But you think about it, if you squash this building down, let's say you remove all the windows and then you emulsify everything inside into fluff, and you're just going to mash this thing down like an accordion, the stuff inside has got to come out. And it's going to be coming out. You know, it's going to be, the average speed will exceed Mach 1 about halfway down. And by the time it gets to the ground, it's like Mach 1.4 average. But from the center, it's like Mach 2.4. So that's going to be like machine gun firing all of the adjacent buildings.
And it's basically the air, the gas between the floors.
This is if you turned all the insides to powder, to dust, and just fluffed it up.
Oh, okay.
And the fluff had to come out. Like all the dust just mysteriously, you know, were fluffed up, but still you're saying it was mashed down. Just to give an idea how fast that stuff had to move out of the way, if it was kinetic energy, you know, exploding something, you would be launching out, you know, chunks of stuff. And to prove that the building did indeed turn to dust in midair, it didn't have to, you know, shoot out anywhere. It just turned to dust. You know,
I'm thinking of a problem with witnesses and videos of witnesses. And the general proposition is that
let me insert something. Okay. First off, as I say, there's three reasons why people can't see what happened. I mean, this happened right in front of our eyes. Why did so few people see it? Because number one, they lack proper problem solving skills due to our quote educational system. And number two, peer pressure, groupthink. They tend to go with the herd. If somebody says something, okay, that person's got it figured out. And once somebody's given an answer, they quit asking questions. And number three, they can't handle the implications of it. They can't handle the implications of it. They're just going to run with, you know, the other things.
Yeah, that's the fear argument.
Right. Okay, so you put eyewitnesses there. Eyewitnesses, majority of them are not material scientists. They don't do materials characterization studies and try to figure out what a material is or do forensic science work. They're just running with whatever they can run with. Just like George Stephanopoulos, the best answer he got was that the building's vaporized. You know, he doesn't stop to think, well, it's not hot here. And I don't fault him for that. He was doing the best job he could given the situation. So look at, you know, eyewitnesses. They don't know how to interpret things, like the FEMA worker who said the steel-toed boots were melting. Well, what we can see from that is there's some problem with the steel-toed boots. They're coming apart somehow, disintegrating. But if they were melting because of heat, you know, if my steel oven is melting, the turkey inside is more than well done. But there's no reports of burned feet. So it isn't, you know, you can't take what people say literally, but when you say they're expressing something the best they can.
Yes, yes. But this problem with eyewitnesses that crops up in some cases, I'm thinking of the firefighter who's got his left hand up in the air and he's talking about the building unraveling from top to bottom, and surely the both towers did that, but he's going boom, he's adding the sound effects that he recalls, you know,
it's just popping out boom boom boom, he was
boom boom boom, and that's what he knows. Yes,
it's true, but hang on, he wasn't saying it. We could hear it popping out. He was popping out, and how would you describe the visual? I would describe boom, 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 boom. You can see the boom, 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 you know, pop, 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 pop. You can see the stuff squirting out. That doesn't mean it was an audio signal that he was hearing. You know, it was just like, you know, boom, 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 boom. That's how I would describe these squirting out, you know, in sequence.
But I'm of the belief that he was giving us a forensic interpretation as well. Now, if you give him the kindest view, he's surely right. It's almost floor by floor, certainly from top to bottom. And then there are these what I'd call moderate explosions occasionally. And he's of the opinion, probably, I don't know this for a fact, but
we're reading stuff into it. Hmm? We just know that one clip where he describes you know, that. And if you were right at the base of the tower and saw, you know, the floors unraveling, you know, the squirt, 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 how would you describe it?
I might well have done the same thing.
It doesn't mean you're hearing bombs exploding.
He was describing it the best way he could. And yes. Now what I'm saying is that subsequent analysts, we'll call them researchers, have used that to just try and reinforce the thermite or kinetic energy weapons or controlled demolition. You know, they say, okay, look at Reynolds or Dr. Wood or Andrew Johnson or whoever.
Debunk, yeah.
yeah. Look at this. I got a video of a firefighter saying this. And right. yet it's hardly decisive in any direction. Yeah. You know,
right. Any of the first responders, they're just doing the best they can to explain what they experienced.
It's very much like you said earlier, when somebody says it looked like so-and-so, well, that's not proof. It's some witness testimony, which is a form of evidence, but it's not hardly decisive.
Speaking of this, you know, debunking, obsessive debunking disorder, ODD, you know, it's a psychological condition where their goal in life is to debunk anybody who's saying anything. Why? Why is that the goal in their life? Why is debunking Dr. Wood, you know, what they think about 24 hours a day in their own life? Why are they obsessed with this?
Well, they are, I would say, seeking a feeling of superiority. I was looking at an eBay ad for a Yamaha SR 500 motorcycle. It's a 1980 model. It's a single long motorcycle, pretty cool little around town. And the lister, who was a dealer, listed it as an SRX 500. And he replied to some commenters, okay, I made a mistake. You proved you're better than I am. It's an SR 500, not an SRX 500. So this goes on in all these arenas on the internet, doesn't it?
Right, but this is more than just that. It's like my favorite one is this character who had this debunking of Hurricane Aaron not of being underreported. I said it was underreported. I didn't say it was no reporting at all. And actually, I quote the Fox weather guy as saying, "You know, there's a real storm system, folks." I don't know if you remember that. I don't remember the exact words. We got this high pressure system moving in and whatnot. And the debunker had used that clip to say, see, Judy Woods doesn't even know. Somehow they misspelled my name. Judy Woods doesn't even know about this. And somebody posted that quote from my book, and the debunker says, where did you get that from? Oh, from Dr. Quitt's book, page such and such. You got to read what you're trying to debunk first.
Yes, and quote it. There's a complete lack of precision among your critics. They paint with a wide brush, and almost everything is wrong.
But why is that their goal in life, instead of determining what happened and going after, you know, making sure this won't happen again, or whatever the objective is?
Yes, I can imagine two explanations, and one is not good for the critics. You are listening to The Reynolds Reveal. We're up for a break. I have Dr. Judy Wood, the most important scientist in the world, I would say, and bar none. So come on back and listen after the break. Welcome back to The Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds, and we here at the Guerrilla Media Network do welcome callers. The number, 218-862-9829. My special guest today, Dr. Judy Wood. Here we are 1 week after the 12th remembrance of 9/11, and we're still learning about what really happened that day. I can remember the then president of Texas A&M University, Robert Gates, who was a CIA spook and then head of the DOD. Basically, when I came out with an article in 2005 in June and saying, hey, there's something way wrong because of this, that, and the other thing with 9/11, he said, it's beyond the pale for any professor to say anything that the government might be lying and implicated in the 9/11 event, and he should basically just shut up. Those weren't his exact words, but the suppression of investigation and spreading the word about 9/11 is out there, and it can imperil your career, as Dr. Judy Wood so well knows. But let's go. We left off with the debunking. Maybe some more should be said about that. This obsessive and excessive debunking that goes on, and most of it is scientifically worthless. What's going on there? You were going to give me an answer about what's going on, not just pursuit of superiority.
Yeah, right. There's several things. One, you know, there's college kids who need to collect extra money, and they get paid to make, you know, idiot posts. It doesn't necessarily have to be a lot of those. It can be others that, you know, tag along because they like to be in the majority. But also, if somebody does not like the implications of this, you know, they can't handle it. They can't handle the truth. They don't want it to be true. They're going to be fighting tooth and nail.
Whichever
way, or if they're
to retain existing religion, huh?
Exactly. And if they're on this, some of them see it as like a football game, and they're rooting for their team, and so they're going to go tackle the opposition. There's a lot of different reasons, but none of them are about the truth.
What's that one website with the James Randi 9/11 blogger? Boy, that's a
that's another one. Yeah, 9/11 bloggers assessment, but the JREF forum.
JREF, that's it. Yeah.
And what is interesting is
all of that has come and gone. Hasn't a lot of it? The forums we're ruined by anonymity and trolls and a bunch of bad people just shouting. People would rather type out an opinion than do some homework. It's easier.
Right. Right. And they don't have any evidence, and they want to do it in anonymity. Like, you know, the alien scientist videos that he debunks laser beams from outer space. Is that an intelligent person who would do that?
We have Philip on line one.
Philip, oh, great.
Do you have a question for Dr. Judy Wood? Hello, Philip.
Okay.
Hi, Philip. You're live with Dr. Judy Wood and Dr. Morgan Reynolds. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, well.
Great. Great. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. I had a chance to speak with Dr. Wood a few months ago on the psyop recovery program. And let me go ahead and apologize in advance if my call drops. I got Brent and two bars, so that may very well happen. But my question was, speaking of cell phones, there were a lot of reports, and I've actually got some members of my family that are in the fire department. There were a lot of reports of the fireman's walkie-talkie and other radio apparatuses not working correctly. And I wanted to see if Dr. Wood had perhaps heard of that, studied that, or had any information regarding maybe why that was.
There could be a variety of reasons we could speculate on, but yeah, I have heard that report from enough sources that, you know, there might be something to that. But also, you think of how many people were trying to call out and call wherever. There was just, you know, jam-packed. Can you think of any other city other than perhaps Tokyo that has more cell phones per square inch, you know, of ground space? You know, there's all the buildings around there, people would be calling out to find out, you know, what's going on, where should I go, and, you know, are so-and-so all right? Yeah, what? You know, a lot of chatter like that that for sure could fill the airwaves. And I don't know how that would interfere with the walkie-talkies, but I do know the handy-talkies, there's problems with those operating. Whether it had something to do with an energy field that was already, you know, going on in the building or not, but there were some calls that got out, like the Oreo Palmer one, just before the building went poof. He'd gotten up in Tower 2 to, what, the 78th floor or something like that?
70-something,
yeah. Yeah, and announced that the fires weren't, you know, you just take them out with the one or two lines or something. And so from the inside, we do know that it wasn't, you know, horrible, awful fires out of control.
And we have the audio for that. In other words, the evidence is good.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. So it could be that there's pockets where reception was good or not good. We also know that when people, you know, I know that it's a different frequency with walkie-talkies, but it's a similar type of thing. And you could have the airwaves just jammed with all sorts of signals, more than you expect. But also you know, if you want to speculate on the energy field around the buildings also interfering with it, there's, you know, we don't have enough information to dissect that one. But I agree that there's something strange going on there.
Hey, Philip, I remember looking at Wikipedia or someplace for how do cell phones work, and I quit after about two paragraphs. That's how good a physical scientist I am. But you have a follow-up question, Philip.
It was no, sir. It was more of an observation that I had made. I'd even seen videos on YouTube from a helicopter that was, I believe, filming the justification of WTC-1, whereas at the onset of the actual justification process, their camera goes a little haywire. So I've just kind of noticed a couple of anomalies as it relates to radio frequencies, and wanted to throw that out there to see how Dr. Wood would respond to it.
Yeah, I tend to, you know, my big motto is, know what it is that you know that you know. and know that everything else you don't know, and resist the temptation of filling in that gap with guesses, assumptions, speculation, hearsay, you know, whatever. So this is pieces of information, and okay, we can put it on the shelf until we know what to do with it, because we don't have it verified by, you know, several other different ways. It's just a story. Okay, could be consistent with a number of different explanations, and we don't know what, you know, what the problem was with her camera. We don't know if somebody got so excited they hit the wrong button on the camera, or what. You know, you need more evidence of the same thing. What I've done carefully, never had on just one little, you know, piece of evidence. What I do know is from the helicopter, there was one video I saw recently where the helicopter person was saying that they just had heard that the Capitol was on fire, ABC or something like that, they'd heard it. So there's these kind of rumors that would go around, get, you know, passed on without being verified. You know, a lot of people put this big stake in the BBC person saying Building 7 was met demise before it did. You know, that's immaterial. It's just, you know, coincidence, because they probably heard that Building 7 was in trouble. You know, a lot of people thought it was, and people had to evacuate it. Just like with one of the plaza, they announced that ahead of time that it had collapsed. They even said on the ticker across the bottom, it was confirmed that it collapsed. Well, the building is still standing now. You know, so there's just a lot of confusion going on that day, and people wanted to be the first to report, or they want to know what's happening, and they're in a panic. They want to know if the world's upside down. You know, is Washington, D.C. burned up? It's still there. Has it been bombed to death? They have no idea, and they're just grabbing on information. So it's also important to take that kind of thing into consideration.
I noticed that in this, what do we call it, a massacre at the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C., the media, for some reason, seized on AR-15 assault rifle. And yet, when the dust settled, there was no claim by law enforcement that there was any AR-15 mm-hmm. present. So,
Right. People want to be the first report, Rob, and they hear some other reporters saying something about that, and only quick to pass it out, and they want to be one to report it first.
You know, so and much so of journalism, yeah. the motto is get it first, get it right. Well, they got it in the wrong order. You know, get it right. And it's nice if you're first, but get it right.
Right, right. There's a lot of that. How would anyone know what was going on in 9/11? And you could say that they heard some rumors someplace about Bin Laden, and they were putting that out there, and then it was a self-fulfilling, you know, thing, rather than, you know, some evil person inserted that into the media. There's all sorts of different scenarios you can come up with. That's why you begin with the evidence. And what it is that you know that you know
Hard.
That you know.
Four.
Well, it's like you say, people want to leap to the answer. And I can remember this Paul Bremer, who was the, remember this, what, governor, prefect in Iraq for a while. And he was part of this Ann Tatlock fiduciary trust and all the, some suspicious connections. But he goes on the Washington, D.C. Media. He's interviewed on the morning of 9/11. This is 11 a.m. on the East Coast or something, and he's given his take. Oh, yeah, OBL. You know, they solved the crime within 45 seconds of the second tower hit.
You know, maybe you just test and see what'll sit in, what people will accept, or who knows why. But the reason why, you know, the secret with cover-ups, The biggest secret, this was a real revelation when I realized this, is because when we're crime solving, the order that you must proceed in is first what happened. And only then do you proceed to how it happened. And then who did it and why did it and so forth. But if you start with how it happened, when you haven't determined what it is that happened, people have to imagine what it was that happened in order to say that, you know, such and such did it. Well, they have. So what they end up doing is solving an imaginary problem, not a real problem.
And they can never, ever solve the real problem as long as they're solving an imaginary problem. And so if you get everyone, you know, jumping on how it happened, who did it, why they did it, you're never going to solve it. Never, ever, because you first have to determine what it was that happened. And, you know, my favorite example is Casey Anthony's trial. The prosecution had failed to solve the crime. They hadn't determined what happened. So the jury was left, you know, what, you know, she guilty of what was the crime now? If you haven't established the crime, how can you charge her with it? It isn't stating that she's innocent or guilty. It's just that the crime wasn't solved. And so it's so important to start out with what happened and do it in an unbiased way instead of, oh, this is what I think happened, so let me go cherry pick the data to fit into it. Like what Stephen Jones told people early on, this is the scientific method. First guess the answer, then go cherry picking the data to support it. No.
Dr. Wood, we have another caller, Ashley. Ashley, would you like to speak to Dr. Wood?
Yes, I would love to speak to Dr. Judy Wood and you, Mr. Reynolds, as well. How are you today?
Hey, we're great.
Great.
I just love the work that you're constantly doing, Dr. Judy, and keep up the fight. You know, the trolls are going to attack you, but just this is just a message to all the trolls out there. I did a little digging on another subject, and I came across something that may explain the classified weapon that Dr. Judy Wood talks about in her QI-TAM case. I have in my possession a Department of the Army, United States Army Intelligence and Security Command. It's a Freedom of Information Act that was asked for by Donald Friedman. And in this, basically, it was all classified information on non-lethal weapons and directive energy weapons. And so I would just like to read a paragraph.
What's the date, Ashley, on that document?
2006,
okay.
December
13th. Go ahead.
Let me answer something else, though. But you need to show what the weapon was by the evidence. And I know there's a temptation to say, well, here's what we can find, so therefore. It's better to actually, you know, the people who know, put them under oath and ask them. That'd
be better, but what does it say?
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I'm curious.
Yep.
Okay. It talks about using a non-lethal weapon for crowd control and stuff like that. And you can heat up the person's body with that.
Oh, yeah. Active denial system.
But it goes on to say something that I found very, very, where is it?
This is getting interesting.
Yes.
During a thunderstorm?
Yes, this is in the tunability section of it. It after it talks about how you could use it as a non-lethal weapon and only make it discomfortable to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It says in tunability, this concept is tunable in that any rate of heating up to the maximum capacity of the source may be obtained. Thus, it is suitable for use in a gradual force or a rheostatic approach. If the situation allows and the source is sufficiently powerful, there is the possibility to use this technology in a lethal mode as well. So they just admit here that they can turn it up, you know, turn it up a little bit and kill somebody or cook them from the inside out.
You cook them from the outside in or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, inside out.
The amount of weapons they have, it's enormous that people don't realize. And thanks for bringing that up. This has been around since, I guess, the mid-80s, maybe. But keep bringing it out every once in a while, and they'll bring it out again. I call it boomerang journalism, where they bring it up like it just came out, like it's brand new information. And then about the active denial system will come up every so often. I don't know why they do that. They do it usually before a protest march, as though, you know, we're going to try out our new toys on you as a threat. Who knows? But yeah, there's all sorts of weapons that are out there.
Yes, I didn't find this in an article. I dug this up looking.
Oh, wow.
I actually found it in a link in Wikipedia. And I just kept digging and digging.
Well, so, actually, I think it's in chapter two of Dr. Wood's book. No, chapter three on the jumpers where she mentions the active denial system.
Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with the book. I have the book.
Okay.
But I just got this letter that I found from the Department of the Army, the Department of Defense. It basically admit that it exists. So anybody out there that tries to deny its existence, just look it up. It's go to slavery.org UK bioeffects of selected non-lethal weapons PDF.
Yeah, and just imagine what all they don't tell you about too. Mm-hmm. They say lasers came to be around the mid-50s, and microwaves, you know, according to public knowledge, came to be in the mid-40s. So you think that they'd advance a little bit more since then?
Oh, absolutely.
Considering, you start getting, space shuttle and, everything happening after that, so of course, yeah.
Well, as our attorney, our former attorney, Jerry Liepart, says, revere the whistleblower. And, Ashley, you're a near whistleblower here.
Yes.
But we need more people to come forward from the inside and
tell us what they've got. Yep.
Yes.
But also, who say, I remember we did a test on this kind of gizmo, 20 years ago, or that kind of information would be, quite useful. But what we do know is what this thing can do, because we saw it. A lot of folks say, well, you need to do name the weapon, and prove it exists, or you got nothing. No, I have the evidence. The building turned into dust in midair, so therefore, a gizmo that turned the building into dust in midair must exist. That's the proof.
And then they say, it would take all this enormous energy, and where is it, Dr. Wood?
There's enough, obviously.
they had enough. Yeah.
Yeah, because it happened. Instead of making calculations, well, I just got your window and see if this tower is still standing there or not.
Here's an example. You'd say, how much energy? Well, if you've got a turbo on a diesel engine, you got forced induction, that helps the power of the diesel motor. In other words, you got energy multipliers out there. So it's kind of dumb to just say it takes X minimum energy. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
You don't know what they've got.
Right, depends on what the mechanism is. You're talking about slingshots. Probably all the people on the planet, slinging, peas or whatever, pea shooters or something, shooting that at the building. That wouldn't do it. But we're not talking about pea shooters. We're not talking about cooking the building to death. We're talking about the building turning to dust in midair. And the evidence for it is, what we see, that there's the rubble left. You go on through all of the pieces of evidence, but what this shows, and this is the most important thing of all, that the big thing that so many folks want to try to cover up, all sorts of different camps want to cover this up. Doesn't matter whose weapon it was or who did 9/11. What 9/11 shows, if enough people get it, they realize that the weaponry, the technology used in 9/11, can be used for free energy, to provide free energy. So therefore, what was demonstrated on 9/11, you can say, was free energy technology. It wasn't used that way necessarily there, but it demonstrated the technology that can be used to provide free, clean energy to the world. Now, who wouldn't want you to know that?
What's that, Ashley?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Okay.
Yes.
Dr. Wood, I have a question for these proponents of mini nukes as the weapon that destroyed the Twin Towers. And that is, we know that let's give them a break. There's no proof that there are suitcase nukes that I know of. But let's suppose there were these shrunken nuclear bombs. But when they go off, there's intense heat, And wouldn't that damage or explode the adjacent nuke? Because they keep on talking about, you know, mini nukes all over every 10th floor right. or something. So isn't that a problem?
Yeah, it's also a problem of, you know, critical mass. That's another good question. But how's one going to affect the other one in a chain reaction to, you know, dustify the building in 2 seconds? Or 8 seconds, but more than that, there was something going on before the building's final demise, you know, that was causing people to go out the windows. They weren't going out the windows because of they knew there were bombs in the building. They're going out the buildings because of something else going on in the building. You know, some kind of energy field that made them mighty uncomfortable to make them want to hang from the outside of the building, take their clothes off, outside the building. Which is quite peculiar.
You're the only one that I know of who's tried to explain the behavior of the jumpers.
I'm not explaining it. I'm pointing it out that, you know, with normal, whatever scenario you're talking about, it doesn't add up. But it would make sense. It's consistent with, an energy field being in there.
Yeah, you don't say it's conclusive that this is it for sure, right. but it's a plausible idea because they were forced into this decision or option.
Well, it may not even be a decision, as I showed in my book. There's some of it that look like they don't know really how they got there, like flapping their wings, as though they just jumped away from. Something that was so painful and didn't really pay attention to where they're jumping and found themselves outside of the building.
Could be called an impulse or just like getting your knee hit with that little hammer. It's just an involuntary response.
Right, a reflex. Like if your hand goes on a stove burner, you don't stop and think, should I take it off? Sniff, sniff, you smell meat cooking. Oh, yeah, I think I'll take it off. No, your hand just flies off that burner.
Right, yeah.
And if there's such a force field in the building, you know, and you just be too painful to sit there. You're just getting out of the way of it. You know, it's like what Ashley pointed out about that active denial system. I've seen videos of it being tested, and there's a reporter who is going, he's how long he can stand to be in it. And they say that wet clothing makes it, thousands of times worse. Like a wet tissue in your microwave oven gets cooked where dry tissue might not. Yeah, because the water molecules are what get excited.
So your book has been out over 3 years now, 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And some progress has been made by its presence. It's amazing how much this cover-up has slowed down the absorption of the knowledge that is in that book. Our friend Andrew Johnson has a new article out. Do you want to talk about that?
It has to do with also people tend to believe what's on the headlines of the newspaper or on the TV news. And if it's not TV news by now, well, it must be bogus. That's a faulty assumption that's made. Or there's so many people, attacking her, criticizing her, she must be wrong. Wait a minute. Why don't you stop and think, what is the motivation for thousands of people to be doing this? And there are literally thousands doing this. Why is it so important to criticize and misrepresent? And
it's interesting that the first response is supposed to be silent, and then they attack you. And then it's accepted as conventional wisdom, right? Who's that? Schopenhauer, the German philosopher, I believe. Well, we're at stage two, if that's a correct portrayal of the stages. But they can't ignore you. You know, it's like some of these people step up, like Mr. Rodriguez, and just put Richard Gage on the spot. That's great.
Or it wasn't... Abe Rodriguez,
Abraham Rodriguez, yeah.
And you know, ask him about the seismic signal, and Richard Gage says, well, he's an architect. He doesn't know anything about seismic charts. Excuse me, he's an architect in San Francisco. Isn't that sort of ground zero for earthquakes? And I do know that the highways are designed differently, the overpasses, that they have a linkage in them so that they don't shear off if there's an earthquake. You know, I teach that to my students in class and show photographs of this design. And so, there, you know, you bet that if you're designing a building in San Francisco, you have to be thinking about seismic signals and what you know to expect there. But more than that, what the title of my book is, and why so many people like to misrepresent it, saying it's a theory of directed free energy technology. No, what it is evidence. The book is evidence. What's it evidence of? Some kind of technology that was used that turns buildings to dust in midair. That technology can also be used to provide free energy. So it is evidence of free energy technology. It was directed in the wrong way on that day. But why is that so important to cover up?
Think well, of all let's the take different... I got to mention Professor Jim Fetcher at this point comes to mind because he's admitted in the past he hasn't read your book. He hasn't read your book. And yet here he is attacking it. He doesn't know half the evidence, I would conjecture, based on that admission right there. And yet he is promoting mini nukes as the weapon. I don't understand how somebody could be honest and exhibit this behavior. So he's dishonest. What I conclude. We are in transition, headed for a break. You're listening to The Reynolds Reveal, and we would invite you to come back for more of this historic interview with Dr. Judy Woods. Welcome back to The Reynolds Reveal. If you would like to call in and speak with Dr. Judy Woods, here at the Guerrilla Media Network, the number is 218-862-9829. What went down on 9/11? We've got, it's an amazing proposition. We've got one person in the world, an honest, brilliant, highly capable scientist who's conducted the investigation. Only one. We have to that one. How many do we need, though? You only need one. And it assembles an incredible array of evidence. So, Dr. Wood, we are so indebted to you. Buy this book, WhereDidTheTowersGo.com. Order this book. And it's a beautifully produced 500-page book with probably that many colored charts, glossies, photos, interviews with eyewitnesses. It assembles such a, and it was like Jerry Liepart said on an interview with me a few weeks ago, it was a fantastical event. And people said that at the time, you know, it was like Independence Day. It was all special effects, but they were real. So we, what can I say beyond that? It's just, but thank you. Thank you. And not only brilliant, but brave. And you are still getting batted around like nobody else in 9/11
the batting
research.
Around, the batting around is on the increase. And something that I noticed that was interesting is, this Jim Fetzer character likes to, you know, shoot all sorts of stuff at me and, you know, really try to do severe character assassination, makes up stuff, or he gets somebody else to make it up and then he repeats it, you know, because he can quote somebody else, so he keeps his hands clean. You know, plausible deniability. And so to destroy me is the goal. Richard Gage, the same thing. Stephen Jones, the same thing. You go down the list. You know, David Chandler, the same thing. But they don't destroy each other. That is fascinating. You know, Fetzer is promoting, you know, mini nukes, and Gage is promoting thermite, Well, but they don't have a problem with that. They have a problem with me because I'm promoting evidence and just the evidence and what the evidence tells you. The evidence tells you you can rule out kinetic energy weapons. You can rule out thermal energy weapons. Done. And
Now, hold it. Wait a minute. Fetzer, you know, he co-authored this piece with, I forget the fellow's last name, Mark somebody, saying thermite doesn't have a whole lot of explosive or kinetic energy. And therefore, Fetzer says, well, I'm dubious about thermite. But no, he hasn't attacked Gage that I know of.
Right. He doesn't destroy Gage and doesn't destroy Stephen Jones.
No, he doesn't. He's pretty gentle with Stephen Jones as well. But they all pile on with Dr. Wood, right?
And focus on things that have nothing to do with the evidence.
Well, yeah, like you say, they can't touch that.
Right. Right. You don't want to entice people to go look at the evidence. But so that is one thing in common is that these various kingpins, they don't destroy each other. Kevin Barrett, he doesn't like the airplane, but he doesn't go after Fetzer on that. You know, he doesn't go after Gage, he doesn't go after Fetzer. They don't go after each other, only me.
And
such a problem for all of them?
Your message about crime scene investigation will not be refuted by any respectable law enforcement authority. Now, law enforcement often screws up badly because they've already tried and convicted their favorite suspect. So they do a sloppy job on the investigation. That's very much in line with what you're saying. Namely, you don't start off with a favorite hypothesis or theory or suspect.
Yes.
What happened? We got to figure out what happened here. And so let's start looking at the evidence. And earlier in the show, when you say, well, this fact may or may not be important right now, I don't know, and put it on the shelf. It might be useful someday when we piece together it with something else.
Right. If you can't confirm it one way or the other, and we're not absolutely sure of it, we don't want to filter that into our list of knowns. Know what it is that you know that you know that you know, and know that everything else you don't know. And don't fill in that gap with assumptions. So if we don't know what this thing was about the signal dropping out for cell phones and walkie-talkies, that was definitely reported. We don't know what that means. It could mean some, overload of the system. It could mean the equipment that passes the signal was having trouble with its, switching power stations. We don't know what was the cause, but put that on the shelf, and then maybe we'll come upon some other evidence that confirms that or adds to it. Like, remember the peeling car issue? I didn't know what that meant, but it was definitely a phenomenon that I noticed is peeling cars. Split thickness through the door, but they're not laminated doors. The metal would just peel mid-thickness and just peel. It was weird. I listed that as just a category of evidence. Doesn't mean that I need to know what it is and just put it aside. And then eventually, I did realize, where that fit in. But be comfortable in not jumping to the answer. That is the most important thing. The answer is not important. It's the process. It's the evidence that's important. And, there's so many people like say, well, this person has this theory, and this person has that theory, and that person has that theory. Let's all argue about theories. Then you're not going to get to the answer. The answer comes to looking at the evidence of what happened. And once you know what happened, then you understand the process so much more. But why is there such this huge cover-up of the evidence of what happened? My book is just evidence, so why do people have such a problem with it? Because it uncovers a whole lot of what went on. No matter whose technology was used that day, there's a lot of companies that have a big stake in keeping that covered up. Because oil companies, for example, and oil makes the world go round, doesn't it?
Corporations. Yeah, it's not love. It's not love.
Right. it's various corporations. And if this information was out, I mean, they got a stake in keeping this covered up. And then you can go to, you know, every other group that has control over people. You know, he who controls the energy controls the people. But
yeah,
there's
that's
even
what I say about socialism is, yeah, he who controls the means of production controls the means of life. And this is very, very similar. Energy is so important. Yes.
And
the government, well, I shouldn't say the government alone, but many economists want to strip out of the consumer price index two things, food and fuel. Well, it's hard to get find things more important than food and fuel. You know, and fuel, that means energy.
Right. But if energy was free, you know, to whoever wanted it, you know, what I mean by free is it's, you know, not metered, off the grid, you know, free for the taking, not stealing, but, you know, free for the taking. That's, I use a kind of a generic free, meaning it's not something that gets controlled. We control it. And if it can, you know, be clean energy, then he who controls the energy isn't going to get to control us. Who currently controls the energy isn't going to get to control us anymore. They don't like that.
Right, and clearly energy is all around us. It's just the magic of harnessing it for useful purposes. And if its supply is endless, that spells trouble for scarce suppliers of energy.
Exactly, for the economic side of it. There's even one step further than that. Is I'm going to add on to my my phrase, he who controls the energy controls the people, but he who controls the thinking of those people controls everything. Think of that one. He who controls people's perception of the reality.
You've taken on, Dr. Wood, the task is enormous.
Uh-huh.
You know, now you got to teach people how to think or problem solve, or at least, you know, you're pointing to this as an important issue. And it's just, it goes back, as you say, to the educational system and multiple choice.
But hang on, let's go back and think of that last phrase I made. He who controls perception controls everything. They control your sense of reality. You talk about people are worried about World War III. World War III has already begun. It's a psychological warfare. Now, look back at how many people on 9/11/01 recognized that what they saw on the TV screen was the towers turning into dust in midair. No, they're told collapse, they're told pile, they're told terrorists. Collapse, pile, terrorists, collapse, pile, terrorists. And so that's what they see. Someone else is controlling the reality. And that's more powerful than controlling energy.
Oh yeah, that's the ultimate. The ultimate control is you think you're free, but you're the captive of this superior power. And
yes,
the psychological control.
Yes. So he who controls the energy controls the people, but he who controls their perception controls everything.
Yeah, in a sense, you control the perception, then you've got control of reality, in a sense.
Yeah.
Well, this is very old. This is millennia after millennia old, because the state, I'll make a bold statement, the state and organized religion are about mind control. They really, it's a top-down type thing instead of a bottom-up. It's a vertical society instead of a horizontal one.
So what do we have with the groups that are in quest of free energy technology? Don't you think they'd want to control that too?
Oh yes, right. Because they're the intruder, the force or the ideas that could make remake society and throw out the ExxonMobils or BPs, et cetera. Sure.
Right. So they need to be keeping an eye on them.
So you need to lead the free energy movement, right? If you're the existing energy monopolist.
Right, right. If it's your job to keep a lid on this, then you got a problem. So how would they keep a lid on this?
Well, as you pointed out earlier, and this was a novel idea, if 9/11 is kept secret. People don't understand it. That's the key to stopping free energy.
Yep. And if you're, in these various clubs that, are in quest of free energy, what would you think of my book?
I would think they'd be hopping gleefully. Hey, this energy, techniques have been used to weaponize. We need to civilianize and help mankind. And they should be all in supporting Dr. Wood's work.
Yeah, shouldn't it be like, it's sort of, use an old cliche here, separate the men from the boys. Who's interested in free energy, who's truly interested in free energy, and who's interested in covering it up?
Okay, so shall we mention a name? There's somebody in free energy movement who purports to be a friend of Dr. Wood's work, but there are reasons to disbelieve that portrayal.
They may even think to themselves that they're respectful of my work, but then their actions need explaining. This isn't just because they don't agree with me, I'm going to go get them. Their actions need an explanation. Someone who's interested in free energy, wouldn't they, want to read my book and digest it and see what all it has to say?
I was reading somewhere, let's see if you can confirm this idea, that Nikola Tesla's work, in a sense, was rejected in the 20th century, post-AC, and then some of his wireless work, et cetera, et cetera. But the ideas were kept alive in East Europe and Russia to some extent and taught in the universities, whereas most people in the U.S. didn't know of Tesla's work, really.
Right. So in our history books or in our science books in public schools, I didn't learn about Tesla there. It's so underplayed, which is so shocking. A lot of different aspects to that. And the biggest thing I come to is, according to our history books, in the year 600 BC, that was when static electricity was discovered. But then, according to our history books, it says it took another 2,400 years to discover electricity. That doesn't make sense to me.
Come again?
Some thunderstorms? Yeah. And I think this is what happens. It gets discovered, and it gets suppressed and undiscovered, and then rediscovered and undiscovered. It's just treading water. It's just going round, until it's, it's too hard to control, and who knows what happens. But this technology is very well known to people who didn't go to school, even. Like John Hutchison. Can do things with this because trying to replicate Nikola Tesla's work, and then there's Ed Leedskalden, who has supposedly a fourth grade education, who built Coral Castle, who quarried out 15 ton stones made out of brain coral, and the castle. And this guy's like 100-120 pounds somewhere around there, and the equipment he used, no way could lift that kind of weight. And instead, he has magnets on this spinning wheel, and he had some other gizmos, but he worked alone, and he would stop working if somebody started looking. And a lot of folks say, well, he really didn't know anything. He was just pulling a fraud. But I can't understand why he didn't show what he knew. You have to earn the right to know this technology. It's like, your gun cabinet. You don't leave a gun cabinet unlocked until everybody in the family knows what guns can do and that there's no undo key, that it's permanent damage. And the same with 9/11. You can't really turn this technology loose until everybody knows.
What's wrong with mainstream science? We've already indirectly discussed an aspect of this, but it's like mainstream science is almost a cover-up of so much of this. Is it because, in part, the military controls a lot of our scientists?
Yeah, and I don't have the quote right in front of me, but the academic industrial complex. Most grants in engineering come from, you know, some relationship to the military-industrial complex, to, you know, from government grants or from these other agencies. So you're not going to get funding unless you're going to, you know, solve the problems they want solved.
And that's one of the major ways academics get ahead is bringing in lucrative contracts
right.
to the university.
Right. And if you go off and work on, like, for example, 9/11, who's going to fund you for that? So you have to do that in your spare time.
You're going to get fired.
You're also, as far as teaching goes, the students are going to be too distracted by looking at all of the trolls on the internet and what all the trolls are saying, and you know it's just a mess. So that's why you can't really get into this as an academic.
And by and large, they haven't, with certain exceptions, like yours truly being a retiree, but you being much younger. And it's not going to be a career improver.
No, no. And as it was, you know, students were emailing my department chair. Trolls were emailing my department chair, emailing the dean, you know, emailing my colleagues. You know, you think the internet's bad. I mean, I saw posted on the internet my landlord's name, address, phone number, what company he owns, what books he's written. You know, this is a real invasion of privacy.
Yeah, certainly people don't fight fair. Many of them don't fight
right.
fair.
So you look at, you know, for the listener out there, look at why someone is doing it. You know, is it because they're interested in determining what happened on 9/11, or are they interested in just attacking somebody for the fun of it or for covering up, you know, or are they interested in covering up what happened on 9/11? But as the, you know, like the, various folks are in all sorts of groups, like that song "Won't Get Fooled Again" by The Who. You know, I love the words to that because these guys had it figured out back then. And the change that had to come, we knew it all along. We were liberated from the fold, that's all. But the world looks just the same, and history ain't changed because the banners are flown in the next war. And then, the next verse is... there's nothing in the streets looks any different to me, and the slogans are replaced by the by. And the parting on the left is now parting on the right, and the beards have all grown longer overnight. And they end with, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. If people stay occupied in these groups and just chase their tails until they're tired of chasing their tails and they move on. And that's what the various groups are all about.
You know, this whole business about... deterring our government from attacking Syria did show that the people, when they're aroused, can deter the government from undertaking a terrible action. So ultimately the people can counter the government or avoid some evils. And I just wonder how ultimately we can. Now, I was listening to Elias Davidson the other day being interviewed by Fetcher. It was a terrible interview because Fetcher was taking him down this track that had nothing to do with Elias Davidson's book.
Let me point out something here about, you know, my QI-TAM case. There was nothing wrong with my QI-TAM case. The judges who dismissed it even wrote in a footnote when they dismiss it, that they acknowledge that the law applied in my case, but they're ignoring the law in order to dismiss the case. And they got to do that because nobody cared. If people had cared, I think we would have had a different outcome. And then what you're saying about people standing up against Syria, yeah, that influences.
It shows it can be done, but our problem is how to get there on 9/11.
That's why we have this truth movement that keeps people from standing behind this.
Agreed. It's amazing what a minority we are.
Yeah, why is that? Why is, people out there need to stop and think what their objective is.
Hey, it's been great, Dr. Judy Wood. I hope this show is important in spreading the word and clarifying why these critics are all wrong. They don't fight fair. And people, get the book if you haven't. Where did the towers go.com and learn and then educate others. You have listened to The Reynolds Reveal, another good show, way better than normal even, good as my shows are. So come on back. I've got another good show lined up for next week. Thank you so much, Dr. Wood.
Thanks for having me.
We would, let's go ahead for courtesy purposes. We have a caller on the line. Caller, are you still there? Caller, are you still there?
Yep, it's Rhonda.
Hi, Rhonda. How are you? You're live with Dr. Reynolds and Dr. Judy Wood.
Hello, Rhonda.
Hi to you both. We're off the stream now, are we, or still on?
We are always on the stream. go ahead, Rhonda.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you again to Dr. Wood for all the work that she does.
Well, thank you so much.
And
get beat on so much, and thanks for offsetting that. Just that one little bit was just so wonderful.
And I just, since I've discovered your work, I kind of go up every 9/11 and fight with people, it seems. And this year, I actually had three or four people comment that they had read your book, and one person actually had purchased five books and distributed them among his friends. So
wow.
This was the first year I felt really encouraged that your story is, or your work is getting out there and getting the respect that it deserves.
Well, that's great. I've sensed that because the opposition, the obsessive opposition has been cranking up the notches. They're feeling more threatened is what I've read from, how things are going, the atmosphere.
Hey, Rhonda, you're a brave person to take on some of your friends and acquaintances. What's the general attitude about 9/11? Do they embrace the government story or what? Some other version? What is it?
Every year it's less and less. Generally speaking, I would say no. People don't want to talk about it anymore. They don't want to see it. They don't want to think about it. They just want to push it aside and pretend it didn't happen. Less and less am I finding that people are willing to take the time out to argue about it even, or to defend their opinion of it.
Is it okay if I interject, Dr. Judy Wood?
Sure.
You and I have had these discussions before. I've learned a lot about the PSYOP, Rhonda. And I'll tell you what, I've been right in the thick of things, and I discovered that even the military manuals on how to affect a PSYOP on a population – The objective is to create an argument and a fatigue, and it's a less than lethal, option to take over a population. And that's the desired effect. They've actually created so many opposing arguments. If they can get us all arguing about it and accomplish absolutely nothing, they've achieved their goals. And for us to relent and to not demand answers to these questions is allowing them to just win the battle. We need to keep fighting on, not get fatigued, and always go for the truth and expose the evidence, I believe.
Yes,
that's a good point.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And it, yeah, it's like, well, so many theories. I guess we'll never know what really happened. And the one that really gets me is like, you know, it's 2 + 3 = 5, but, you know, Judy Woods has this theory, and then somebody else has this theory that 2 + 3 = 6. Somebody else has this theory that 2 + 3 = 7. I guess we'll never know what 2 + 3 is. Might as well throw our hands up and, you know, leave it. No, wait, 2 + 3 = 5. Look at the evidence. You know, add it, you know, and you can get to the answer. You don't need somebody else to tell you what how to sum up those numbers. You just need to be able to look at the evidence. It's not about a theory. It's about evidence.
And as long as they throw a number of different stories into the mix, then the people who are actually taking time out to learn the truth get so confused that they can be taken down these rabbit holes. Like all these last things that have happened, Sandy Hook and Boston Marathon and everything, there are so many different ways that you can approach these
situations. That's a great example. Yeah, that's a great example, because look at how many times they get us arguing.
There's truth, and there's a little bit of disinfo and a little bit of misinfo, and there's enough in there to confuse enough people and just wear them out.
That's right.
Yep.
And just get worn out.
I say about Sandy Hook, you know, what do I know that I know that I know? Nothing. All right, done.
Yeah.
Walk on. You know, I can't solve it. So why argue about opinions of speculation, of hearsay, of theories, of assumptions, of ideas, of who knows what?
Hey, but on the other hand, I think it's valid to say the credibility of the government and their official stories is just taken hit after hit. The NSA thing is great. So people
it
can
is.
Say, wait a minute, 9/11, there's some funny stuff. I don't feel right about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's headed our way, you know, in terms of who's going to win this thing longer run.
Yes, as long as people don't lose their thinking before the end of the road. But with regard to how to, you know, approach others, say, you know, when they don't know who to believe or what to believe, believe yourself. Don't believe me. Believe yourself. Believe the evidence. You know, look at the evidence and think for yourself. And that's the only way out of this. Because how did we get into this fix to begin with? Because we turned our thinking over to someone else's keeping. We need to take it back in our own keeping. That
there's a TV ad by Charles Schwab with him as a spokesperson. And he says, oh, people take control of their lives in every other aspect.
Dr. Reynolds, are you still there? Okay, we will, I think, reconnect with him as we're reconnecting. It is reconnecting. Rhonda, can I offer something to you? Dr. Judy Wood taught myself and all those that have come into contact with her through our network and through our show. You know what she taught me? It's been the most valuable tool that I use to free my mind from it all. She taught us to turn the volume down when we look at an incident.
Turn the volume off and look.
Turn the volume off and look at it, and you can never be deceived by yourself. Your own eyes will look right at the evidence and at the truth. And then, you know, when you turn it back up, you'll notice that people will want to tell you what you're seeing. And that's the worst thing that you could do is to be told what you're seeing right in front of you. No one can ever tell me now, as I look at those images of the towers turning to dust in midair, seeing steel disintegrate just about, right? That molecular dissociation. No one can ever tell me that what I saw was not towers turning to dust in midair. And all the evidence, you know, they can't tell me what I saw or what I didn't see. I know for myself.
Yeah, stick some earplugs in.
Okay, we'll go. It looks like Dr. Reynolds is off and running. We lost his connection, but Rhonda, thank you very much for calling in. It was a great segment. I've actually recorded this.
Thank you very much for calling.
Yes, and we're going to add this to the episode.
You.
It was a great, thoughtful call, and I think everyone can benefit.
Something else I'd like to add, too, if I can, to thank all of the listeners out there, the supportive listeners. And earlier when I was talking about how, you know, Fetzer and Gage and so forth only go after me, and they don't destroy each other, and they, you know, promote rabies from outer space, all sorts of nonsense. I'd like to thank those who support my work and support the truth. I'd like to thank them for not doing that. No, they don't promote, you know, fairy dust from outer space or, you know, whatever nonsense, because they're interested in the truth. And they need to be commended for that. And I'd really like to thank them from the bottom of my heart.
And Dr. Judy, you know, I'm sure I can speak for a lot of people that have read your textbook, that have seen your evidence. And, I mean, I want to personally, I'm coming up on my 1-year anniversary when I was exposed to your name, when I heard it from Jesse Ventura. In fact, it was November 9th, I think. November 9th of last year. I want to thank you for changing my life and changing the way I look at the world. I mean, you have literally impacted my life, and I'm sure that applies to a lot of other people. And I want to thank you for your courage and for everything you're doing in service of our country. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And thanks for being one of those folks out there.
Yeah, one of those folks that will never forget the emotion and the passion that I had when 9/11 happened. We all did. We had a lot of emotion. We spent $1 trillion expressing ourselves to go kill brown people in the desert. We need to remember those feelings and never relent, never give up trying to seek the truth, right? So thank you very much for your courage and your persistence.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, folks, that concludes this episode of The Reynolds Reveal. Certainly one for the history books. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to sign off. Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you, Pete.
All right, bye-bye. Wow, what a great 9/11 episode. Absolutely, positively. Thank you very much, Dr. Judy. Great episode.